This is the December 9 edition of Commodity Week.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at AgriGold.com.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists today for Commodity Week include Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting out of Channel Seeds in Windsor, Illinois, Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities from Normal, Illinois, and Greg Johnson of the Andersons from right here in Champaign County, along with Mike Zuzolo at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. This morning, the United States Department of Agriculture released its monthly world agricultural supply and demand estimates. The estimates, domestically at least, did not change the ending stocks for the major crops, corn, soybeans, or wheat. I'd like to know from you, Matt Bennett, what your assessment was upon the end of the day trade that actually pushed prices higher.
It was pretty mellow. You know, there wasn't a whole lot of trade going on, and both corn and beans were within a penny of unchanged for a while. And so, you know, you take that a little farther into the day, and we see a little bit of buying pick up. And I think some people wanted to go home, you know, maybe buying a few contracts of both corn and beans, because we certainly had a very nice close.
What was the reaction at the grain elevator, Greg Johnson?
Well, I guess I wasn't surprised. I wouldn't have been surprised one way or the other. The farmers aren't selling. They think the price is too low, and they're waiting for higher prices, and they may have to wait till next spring, but they seem content to sell beans and hold on to the corn until then. So the farmers aren't selling, and yet, you know, the government reminded us today that we've got 2.3, 2.4 billion bushels of corn expected to be carried over, so we're not going to go too much higher either. It just seems like we're stuck in this 20-cent trading range, and you know, I guess the good news is we're at the top end of the trading range now again, but it wouldn't surprise me if we're back down into the middle of the range, you know, sometime in the next week or two either.
Mike Zuzolo, are you of the same mind that we're at the top of the trading range and likely not to break through the top of it?
I think we have our best shot we've had probably in 2 or 3 months, Todd, exactly because of what Greg just said. Farmers aren't going to sell, so the cash side is probably going to be on your side. You're not going to see a lot of selling until we get into January. I think also the trade has really tried to downplay heading into Friday's report what's happening with the wheat. I know it's early. I know wheat's a grass. I know you can't kill wheat, but there's still a discount in the wheat price when it comes to the weather premium and what we're experiencing here in the United States. And maybe that's what Friday's numbers did for us, is by not raising carryover in domestically, but raising it globally in other areas, maybe the trade has started to understand that there is a little bit of premium that probably needs to be put in. And I think the trade also tried very hard to not look at India's import tariff cut when that came out on Thursday, and the expectations for better demand out of India, I think, probably played a role by Friday afternoon along with the weather. So as far as the report as a whole, I actually felt like it came in very nicely from a standpoint of we're in the weather market for South America at this stage, and if the weather's dry, we can scale up, sell, and defend it. And if the weather stays dry, then they'll start trading the corn in a more bullish manner, and that will help take us out of the trading range as well. So I see several things that could develop that if they work together, we'd be in the best spot for breaking through the trading range and getting up to around 375, 385 in March corn. The best chance we've had in a few months.
Pete Manhart, kind of a two-pronged question for you. First, your assessment of the report as it was released this morning, and then what do traders do about the January report and the corn number? Are we of a mind that this corn crop can get bigger, or will it turn the corner and be a smaller number by the time we get to January the 12th?
I think the numbers aren't going to change much at all. Just like today, they didn't in the U.S. They changed nothing. They changed a little in the world, and that could happen again. But I think the South American weather is the big thing. And the January report, what can change there? What are they going to find different? I don't know that they're going to find much of anything different. So I kind of see it as a blah report also. They might change a few little things, but I think we're in a sideways, like Greg said, back and forth, until we get some kind of new news that will either push it lower from too much or more than we expected, or higher from not as good a crop in South America. So I think we're just in a sideways. I think the next report, what can it change? Very much. And I just don't expect it to change much.
Matt Bennett, there will be some producers that need to generate some income, whether it's for tax purposes or other reasons, before the end of the year. Which crop and how soon do they make the sale?
You know, I think and some of it probably depends on whether it's commercially stored or, you know, at home in the elevator. You know, a lot of folks have talked about not wanting to pay a whole lot in commercial storage. But the bottom line for most situations is that, you know, the upfront charge has already been paid. And so basis has already rallied back fairly handily as far as the corn market goes. You know, if I was going to be moving something, if I still had beans on hand, which I don't think a ton of producers have near as much beans as what they do corn, I'd certainly be looking pretty closely at moving the soybeans first. But I wouldn't have any problem with moving some corn. I don't know that I want to give up 100% of my ownership, though. And so, you know, I think there's some things we can do on re-ownership as far as maybe going out to the July, maybe buying a bull call spread and doing it for a pretty cheap amount of money to be able to stay in the market. Because I do think the farther we go here with demand where it's at and the fact that I think we're going to lose a substantial amount of corn acres going into 17, you know, I do think that there will be a little bit of a chance for this corn market to see a little more appreciation later on.
Mike Zuzulo, let's turn our attention to new crop soybeans for some time in May and June, July, August, September, October, November, December. Many have been saying, make a good sale here, make a good sale here. And some of them were at $9, now are in that $10 range or close to it. And I'm talking about for new crop at this point. Farmers probably have a little bit of caution about that at this time. We've got a rally in the bean market again, and this is the third time up in, less than 2 weeks. Do you think this is a time that producers might want to take an opportunity to price out some soybeans for the new crop?
I do, because I think you're getting to the point now, Todd, where after raising the ending stocks globally and not lowering the U.S. ending stocks, we are sitting with double the ending stocks and $1.50 higher than we were a year ago in leaf month beans, and not much different than that in new crop beans. So, you know, as a producer right now in new crop beans, I think you have to sit there and say to yourself, am I going to completely play my marketing plan solely on the weather when I have so many tools that I can utilize to sell and defend a very profitable crop year? And I think the other thing that you have to start thinking about too, in my view, and I agree with Matt, is as far as the acreage mix goes, as you get to $10.75 or even $11 November beans, if corn and the ratio don't keep up with that kind of a rally, I think you'll turn a lot of heads and turn a lot of bean acres away and out of corn, and maybe even corn on corn acres we'll go back to more of a bean-corn mix and rotation. So I think this is the time, especially after this report Friday, that producers can really sit down and say, okay, how many factors do I have going for me? And I would even argue the demand. I didn't like the fact that China came in and put that immediate duty, anti-dumping duty on U.S. DDGs of almost 34% on Friday. I just don't like those kind of scenarios. I don't like the fact that we're talking about Mexico again and building the wall when they're one of our best trading partners. Not that I'm pro, you know, illegal immigration. I'm not saying that. But as a producer, you've got factors that you have absolutely no control over, and the weather is a number one, and the dollar is right there behind it. And then you've got the geopolitical stuff and the issues in politics. So you really got to sit there and think about it, in my opinion.
One of the things that was noted, Greg Johnson, by USDA in the commentary that was released along with World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates was one of the reasons that they say there was no change in the export number for soybeans. And it's simply a sentence that says, although early season soybean exports are sharply higher than a year ago, competition from South America is expected to be strong in the second half of the marketing year. How important do you think it was that USDA stuck that statement into this particular report?
Well, I think with the increased acres out of South America, that's probably, you know, very realistic. They're going to have a potentially bigger crop, assuming, you know, decent weather in January. So we would look for South America to gain a bunch of that export market back, come February, March, April. So the U.S. still has a little bit of a window here where we're the main exporter for the rest of December and maybe part of January. But you would think China probably is going to get most of its soybean needs from South America once we get into their harvest time frame. So I think they're exactly right that exports have been good, but we can't realistically expect that to continue at this pace, assuming it rains in South America in January.
And you would be a seller of new crop soybeans at least a percentage sooner rather than later?
Yeah, just for all the reasons that were mentioned. One, a 480 million bushel projected carryout here in the U.S., that's huge. So beans won't be at $10 if that really does materialize. Two, just from a profitability point of view, if we're wrong, if we sell $10 beans, even if we're wrong and they go to $11, farmers can make money selling $10 beans at 65 bushels to the acre. And then, as Mike mentioned, the trade uncertainty, that's a unknown. Hopefully it doesn't amount to anything, but you never know. And why not take a little bit of risk off the table and get some $10 beans sold just in case?
I know Matt sits in the same space. How about you, Pete? Are you a seller of new crop soybeans at this time?
Yeah, we've had some sold here in the last couple of weeks when we get up to where we're at to a little higher, sold some between 10 and 10.15. I would be doing some of that. But also something to look at is protecting the bottom side and let the top open. There you don't have to produce the bushels if we have a bad year. If we have a bad year and prices go up, you still have higher prices for what you have. So another way to look at it would be to buying puts underneath the market above that $10 number, and you've got protection on the downside.
Matt, USDA did substantially raise the average season's cash price for soybeans. Any reason to read much into that?
I don't know about reading too much in. You know, the thing that's been interesting to me lately when I've talked to grower meetings is that the USDA was projecting 920 at the time, and, you know, you're sitting there, it's a 10 handle plus, you know, talking no beans, and I'm just saying, you know what, we need to be looking at this a little bit. Obviously, with you raising it, it's not near the discussion, I guess, that I was given before, but I think to go along with what, you know, what these guys are saying, my opinion on the beans is, you know, I've had guys say, should I buy a November bean put for 50 cents, you know, a $10 put? And I'm like, you know, I guess you could sell November or fall beans at the elevator for $10, or you can buy a put for 50 cents. You know, I mean, obviously you'd have to get a little bit more creative than that. But to me, the market is offering you a pretty darn good can't-miss scenario, at least on a portion of your bushels. And I agree totally with Greg. It's pretty tough not to make money at $10 soybeans here in central Illinois anyway.
Mike, a similar question for you, except for the corn. They raised the average season cash price there, a nickel on both ends. What do you read there?
Right. Thank you. We talked about that on the closing. I think my train of thought would be if there is a corn carryover and production that's trapped up in the northern states, Minnesota, Iowa, North Dakota, and northern Illinois, and as we get into wintertime and the bins are locked for the most part, in the areas west of the Mississippi, close along 36, and east of the Mississippi along 36, are we seeing enough sales that, A, they can make a better judgment that maybe the crop is not as big? And I know this is a jump, but I'm going to do some work on this, but I think there's another thing that you have to think about when it comes to if the wintertime gets worse and worse in the northern plains, will that corn become trapped, and will that then mean we'll have to work the basis up to pull the corn down. So maybe the nickel means nothing, but going into the January report, I think there's some work that needs to be done to see exactly why they did what they did.
Pete Manhart, do you see opportunity for corn at higher prices still?
I still do see that. I think we grind through. We have great usage. It's huge carryout, but I think as we get closer towards spring, if we have beans still above 10 cash or near there, people are going to look at saying that bean switch to out of corn acres, and I think less corn acres mean more opportunities starting right away for old crop corn and especially new crop corn. So I would be looking on corn as a possibility of gaining quite a bit just due to those changes. The nickel that the government said, I think, is an indication, yeah, that we, you know, we could go higher, but we have great usage of corn too, and all of a sudden, if you have trouble, you have less acres. That 2.4 billion isn't much compared to years ago when we had 4 billion and beans shot through the moon, corn shot through the moon.
Given all these comments, Greg Johnson, USDA, did make note that the Brazil corn crop was in good condition and bigger than they thought. Worried at all about the potential of competition there?
Yeah, I think so. We've got a long ways to go with the weather down there. It's a La Nina year, but they're off to a great start in Brazil. There's just a few areas that are a little too dry, but they haven't even planted their Serafina crop yet, their second crop corn. So we've got a long ways to go before we know, but the potential is there for competition from exports. So, but as Pete said, too, it looks like we're going to be planting less corn here in the United States. So it just kind of depends how long a farmer wants to hold on to corn. It kind of feels to me like we may have to wait until that March 31 planting intentions report and see how many extra bean acres we get, how many fewer corn acres we get before we can realistically think that we're going to get a big rally in corn. You know, we can always get 10 or 15 cents one way or the other, but to get a major rally in corn, I think we're going to have to see something that we don't know about today, and that might be the acreage number.
And this might be a question for either you or Matt. Corn that is in commercial storage, how quickly does it come out if it's unpriced? Do they often just go ahead and sell in January, or are they willing to pay storage for a couple of more months?
I would answer that by, you know, this year it seems like farmers are selling beans and taking basis contract advances on the corn to try to generate revenue to pay the bills. They're trying to do everything they can not to sell the corn at these prices. You know, they remember last spring and summer it went to $4. The year before, in the spring and the summer, it went to $4. And so they remember that, and they think if they can just hold on long enough, we're going to see $4 corn. Maybe, but I think it's going to take an acreage number to do that, and it's going to be March or April or May before we see that. So, you know, farmers can sell at any time, but my guess is they're going to hold on to corn for an extended period of time and see what happens this spring.
You know, I think I would pretty much agree with everything that Greg's saying. It seems to me like a lot of producers are extremely hesitant to either sell corn or give up ownership in corn. And so, you know, I think that they are being fairly creative. I think that they're a little more, able and willing, if you will, to go ahead and move to soybeans, especially, you know, when you look at what their yields were. At today's cash prices, even, you know, obviously beans would have been significantly more profitable. You know, of course, we've talked about this before. This is 4 years in a row that bean revenues beat corn revenue here in Illinois. So, I think that there's probably a pretty good chance that guys will start moving corn, but it's going to take, in my opinion, a move, you know, probably more than that 10 to 15 cents that Greg was alluding to earlier, to really get them to let go, either that or the combination of a futures move and maybe another 10 cents a basis. But I don't think that's going to happen, at least until you get through the early January glut.
Your assessment, Mike Zuzulo, of the corn increases that USDA built into the global numbers. China was up 3.55 million metric tons. Brazil was up 3 million metric tons.
Yeah, the Brazil number is something to definitely watch as we get into the later January time period, especially if the currency markets start to work against us. And I think that's probably again, as I said on the closing commentary on Friday, it seems like to me, Todd, this report elevates the U.S. dollar in terms of primacy, in terms of how high producers can expect to get their crop prices in 2017 and the 2016 in the bin. We dodged a major bullet in terms of the weekly close this week in the currencies. The euro currency went down below 105. It tested its 2015 low, which was also a 12-year low. And so the Italian referendum being defeated did have a negative impact on the currencies when it was all said and done, negative in terms of commodity producers and higher prices. So this is a battle we're going to have to face all winter long. The Brazilian corn does not bother me as much. The Chinese corn does not bother me as much. In fact, that may be part of the reason why, along with the winter wheat weather, we were able to see when beans didn't follow through to the downside on Friday, the trade was willing to cover their shorts in corn, exactly because where USDA put those higher supplies. One of those big countries, the column was in China. So with China, the market assumes, well, that's locked up. That's not going to be market available, and we're not selling corn to China anyway, so it really doesn't matter.
Let's get our final words from each of you. I think, Mike, I'll start with you.
Well, I think I'll just reiterate. I think with going into this report, my mindset was, do we really need to keep buying bean acres for the springtime and rationing old crop beans because of the export demand that we're seeing. And USDA, if you buy into their numbers for soybeans, you're putting more leverage and more pressure on yourself to make the weather happen down in South America, especially the Brazilian weather, in terms of the soybeans. So I think you've taken out of your portfolio another chance of another reason to rally in the soybeans, i.e. lower supplies from the old crop carryover. So use that and utilize that in your winter marketing plan. That is a big medium-term feature in my view.
Matt Bennett, Bennett Consulting of Channel Seeds.
Yeah, I think a couple of things that jump out to me. I definitely don't want to ignore what, in my opinion, is a good fortune here with the soybean market. That doesn't mean that a producer can't keep flexibility, like Pete was talking before, but I certainly don't want to sit here and assume this price is stable and will stay here forever. And then when you look at corn, you know, it's probably, as far as looking at new crop, I want to look at the big picture. I do expect to see some strength in the corn market at some point, but, you know, on the same token, our input costs are significantly lower than what they were last year. And I think that doing a fair amount of straight hedging as we move forward, if we can push up closer up to and over $4, it's probably a pretty smart thing to do.
Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities.
I still think we're in a sideways back and forth, but I think as we get near tops, we should be looking at protecting bottoms. If we need to sell corn, I would be looking at old crop, replacing it out in July just due to the less acres that we possibly could have that would push them higher in the summer to make up some of that. But I think we have to be nimble and ready on bounces. I think we'll still have weather scares both in South America and here. And on those scares, we need to be ready to market or protect the bottom end.
And a very short word from Greg Johnson of the Andersons.
I would echo what Pete said. I think farmers need to be realistic in their expectations of corn prices. I mean, I know they like $4, but if we get a 10, 15 cent rally in corn, we probably want to let loose of a little bit of that corn and continue to sell beans above $10.
That's Greg Johnson of the Andersons from right here in Champaign County, Illinois, joining us on this December 9 edition of Commodity Week, along with Mike Zuzlo at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas, and Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting and Channel Seeds from Windsor, Illinois. Pete Manhart was here, too, from Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find us online at willag.org, willag.org. There you may make a contribution on behalf of the agricultural programming to Illinois Public Media. We're in the midst of a final couple days of fundraising here at the radio station for the month of December and the calendar year. If you feel so inclined, be sure to visit our website at willag.org or willpledge.org, or to make this phone call, 217-244-9455, and pledge your financial support to the radio station that brings you agriculture. It is, after all, public radio for the farming world. It's quick, it's simple, and it's just, quite frankly, the right thing to do. Don't wait and do it right now at willag.org, willag.org. For University of Illinois Extension and Illinois Public Media, I'm Todd Gleason.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at agrigold.com.